From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network. Lindsay Harkham, Vice President of Business Development and Biosciences at the New York City Economic Development Corporation, and William Fair, Managing Director at Alexandria Real Estate Equities, are interviewed by Gen's Editor-in-Chief John Sterling about New York City's efforts to raise its profile as a major biotechnology center.
Lindsay Harkham serves as the Vice President of Business Development in Biosciences at the New York City Economic Development Corporation. He's responsible for retention, recruitment, and real estate activities related to the bioscience industry in New York City. Bill Fair is Managing Director at Alexandria Real Estate Equities, which has committed $700 million to the development of the East River Science Park in New York. Bill is the former Managing Director of Healthcare and Bioscience at the New York City Economic Development Corporation. Lindsay and Bill, thanks so much for taking the time for this interview. Lindsay, let's start with you. When you say bioscience cluster, I'd bet that very few people in the biotech world would associate that term with New York City. Why do you think that's the case, even though there are reportedly over 125 commercial bioscience companies based in the five boroughs?
John, that's true. Yeah, we're really lucky to be in a city that's the crossroads of so many major industries. New York City is the financial capital of the world, the media hub, center of a number of academic institutions, fashion, Broadway. There is just so much going on in New York City. But with that kind of energy and buzz, it really does not allow awareness for other industries such as biotech. New York was built on the fire sector, finance, insurance, real estate, and those stories are just so very dominant. If you've seen our website and the newsletters, you'll note that there are some significant funding rounds in the city. And even recently, in a tough funding environment, Intercept raised $25 million. Stemline recently raised $12.5 million. They're an oncology company that's based in New York City. And there are several other examples. Just unfortunately, these stories tend to be a few zeros shy of what makes the news in the city. But it's a perception problem, and that's something that the New York City Economic Development Corporation and City Hall are trying to address.
And if I might just add to that, John, and echoes a little bit of what Lindsay said, I think perhaps the term cluster has been misused, not just domestically, but internationally as well. And it's almost, when we use the term cluster, we think about sheer number of companies that are located in a geographic location. I think cluster is a much more powerful term that not just implies number of companies, but implies the other industries around those companies and other facilities around those companies that naturally cluster around companies that really constitute what makes a great cluster versus just a collection of companies. And in the case of New York City, I would say some of those other clusteral components would be the strong academic sector we have here, certainly Wall Street that's here, the media sector, the proximity to big pharma, the idea that you've got untapped talent here, and especially the tremendous research and clinical community. All of those things, while in and of themselves aren't biotech companies per se, those are all very relevant measurements of the size of a cluster. And yet when you look at global studies, people will typically and quite simplistically default to City X has so many biotech companies and City Y has four times as many versus a place like New York, which only has 125, as you said. But I think we need to think of clusters as a much larger concept. And I think you'll actually start to see that happening in places like Europe as well, where in certain segments of Europe, they've started to think about clusters beyond geographic boundaries and gone into sort of super regional clusters. So it's just a word I would be careful with.
Okay, Bill, I want to follow up with you because one of the questions I posed to Lindsay was, despite all the things that New York has going for it, financial center, academic institutions, medical centers, cultural capital, a lot of people don't think of it in the same terms of either a Boston or a San Francisco. Lindsay and I know other people think a lot of it has been pretty much perceptual. What's your take on why people don't view the city in sort of broader biotech terms?
I think the city is a victim of its own success. If you ask anybody, not just the man on the street or woman on the street New Yorker, but if you ask anybody across the globe what their vision is of New York or their perception is of New York, they will have an answer, and they will have an answer right at the tip of your tongue. It could be everything from Wall Street to the Lion King to the home to the Today Show. It could be all of these things. And we really are, as a city, a victim of our very diverse economy and the many successes that we have here, versus some other places where they may have one or two key luminary assets that they point to and say, look, we're home to the University of X, or we're home to one big Fortune 500 company. In New York, there's just so much going on. I think it's difficult, unless you actually ask the probing questions, not you, but if one asks the probing questions, what do you think about New York in science? And I've done that internationally, because when I would be traveling on behalf of the city, the people would say to me, oh, you're from New York City. Well, that's great, because it's home to Columbia, and Columbia is a world-class institution. And I said, well, yes, absolutely, it is home to Columbia, but You do recognize it's also home to NYU, and you could see the light go on over their head saying, yeah, oh, you're right, it's NYU. And then you'd say, well, don't forget about Weill Cornell or Rockefeller or Memorial Sloan Kettering. And I think in the collective minds of people and their perceptions, they just don't aggregate these globally recognized powerhouse academic and research brands as together in a city of our five boroughs.
And related to that, Bill, that there's even more in the way of impressive academic medical institutions here, Mount Sinai, Einstein Medical College. I mean, in total, these academic medical centers generate $1.3 billion in NIH funding. It's just amazing that is second only to Boston. And when you analyze the figures, actually even closer, and isolate the NIH funding generated by just the city's colleges and universities, and compare that to Boston's city's colleges and universities, you find that we rank number one in NIH funding. So it's just so very interesting that the New York City's institutions excel so greatly in that area, and also that these universities spun out 20 companies in 2007. But there's a variety of other things going on here as well. Pfizer is based here. Their headquarters is based here. Bristol-Myers Squibb, Forest Labs, ImClone all have their headquarters in New York City. But one more thing I think that's prevented the city from attaining the biotech status of Boston is certainly a lack of appropriate commercial lab space. We currently have the Audubon Center, which is a biotech wet lab incubator in Manhattan, about 50,000 square feet. SUNY Downstate has an incubator in Brooklyn, and that is trending toward about 50,000 square feet as well. But with the Bloomberg administration, New York City EDC has been able to address the lab shortage with East River Science Park and the BioBat facility.
We're actually going to get into this business about lack of laboratory space in the next two questions. The New York City Economic Development Corporation has taken a number of steps, including the New York City Bioscience Initiative, to effectively become one of the leading bioscience centers in the U.S., if not the world. Lindsay, would you describe some of these efforts?
Yeah, big part of our effort, as we've talked about already, is trying to get New York City on the map as a biotech destination to make sure that we're able to promote the city's unique assets, the strength of the city as a center of science, the talent base that is here. According to a BioPatel study published last year, Metro New York is number one in bioscience employment. And that's an important issue to these companies. It's certainly is a restriction in many other areas. And, of course, being the center of finance, that is a very important element to the companies. The New York City Bioscience Initiative is actually a private-public partnership with the New York City Economic Development Corporation, New York City Investment Fund. The New York City partnership is included in that, along with many of the city's research institutions and members of the investment community, and all working together to promote New York City as a biotech destination and to make sure that the assets of the city are well known.
I would add one more just piece there to the first part that Lindsay articulated, John, and that is, you know, because New York is the center of so many different industries, and because the people who tend to be drawn into the bioscience sector tend to be pretty smart and intelligent people, and like to marry or date or partner with like-minded folks, it's one of the very few cities in the country where if your girlfriend, wife, partner is, you know, an artist, or if they're in media, or they're working in the garment industry or on Wall Street, you can work in biotech in New York, and they can find ample career opportunities in a place like New York that's not just limited to, it's not sort of a one-industry town.
Now, a few of the most longstanding criticisms, some may be real, some may be imagined, but these have been floating around for a number of years, of New York City's attempt to evolve into a leading biotech center include: one, it's too expensive for a biotech startup to do business there. Affordable housing for employees is at a premium. There's something Lindsay mentioned. There's a lack of expandable laboratory space. And fourth, academic research centers have been unwilling to cooperate with each other a lot in the past. I guess you could call it turf wars. How have these issues been addressed, Lindsay?
Well, when you look at that, there's also the fact that there are many elements here for the businesses to be very, very successful with the access and proximity to the academic medical centers and the talent pool are all very important. So there's really so many reasons why the companies cannot afford to not be here. The talent pool, again, is a very important situation for most of the companies. And our large talent pool in bioscience area is really largely due to the concentration of hospitals and the academic medical centers. And certainly the local companies inform us that finding the scientific talent they need is really not a problem. Many of the support services are here as well. They're just unknowns. Certainly there's a great concentration of intellectual property attorneys, transactional attorneys. The venture capital base is here as well. And even some of the companies that are necessary to support biotech is here also. Epic Pharma was recently established as a contract pharmaceutical manufacturer in Queens. This is a 200-person operation. It's very important to the city to be able to show and demonstrate that we not only have the early stage research and some of the later companies, but we can fulfill the needs of the contract manufacturing component as well. Clinilabs is a 200-employee bioscience company in Midtown West. They specialize in the development of cardiovascular and CNS therapeutics. They are a CRO in the city. So there's a variety of support services that are here to support the industry overall.
And John, there's one other I would add to Lindsay's list, just because it's been talked about so much in the media, and I know it's under increasing pressure, but it's Madison Avenue. If you look at the spend both on biotechs and pharmas on DTC expenditures to get their different products out to the globe, that infrastructure is here and it is roaring.
John, you had mentioned the issue of affordable housing, so I certainly want to address that as well, because it is an issue that the city has taken steps to address. There's been some very strong efforts by City Hall and the Economic Development Corporation
to develop the business districts where housing is more affordable. Midtown is always going to be pricey, but certain business districts such as Long Island City are really being developed as an affordable alternative. And the Bloomberg administration has also made great efforts to expand the infrastructure and the transportation system in the city so that the people that not only work here can live here as well. So those areas are being addressed on affordable housing.
I want to come back to this question of academic research centers working with each other, because I've heard this over the years from a number of different people, that unlike some places in this country and around the world, that where a big university or a major research center would cooperate with others in the vicinity, New York, for a bunch of reasons, did not. Was there any truth to that? And if so, how has that situation changed in the last few years? Because one of the real keys to success in any bioregion anywhere in the world is not only the companies working together, but the universities forming strong alliances. Lindsay or Bill, either one of you want to answer that?
John, it's real interesting that the seven top academic medical centers in a show of unity came together a couple of years ago to create the New York Academic Consortium. And these are the seven largest academic medical centers in New York City. Their collective tech transfer and industry relations offices work together. And basically they're sharing best practices and sharing results as well. And we actually partnered with them on important events, most recently at the Bio 2008 conference in San Diego. We teamed up with them in a booth for New York City Bioscience.
The New York Academic Consortium that Lindsay talked about is absolutely, you know, just a tremendous, tremendous accomplishment. And credit needs to go where credit's due, and that those are the tech transfer officers at those respective institutions and the leadership of those institutions who have done a heck of a job to overcome those perceptual historic issues that you were talking about. But I also think you need to look at the leadership that has come into play over the last, say, 7 or 8 years at the New York academic institutions. And there's some new blood there, and that new blood is really trying to look at a new page in the playbook. And no longer is it simply good enough to attract, you know, the older researcher with his or her august grants and postdocs and need for clinical or research space and an office that's grandiose. But what they're looking at quite seriously is how do they compete not against Columbia versus Cornell versus NYU, but how do they compete globally to attract what they affectionately call the Gen X researcher who is going to represent the NIH funding of the future and is also likely to be the entrepreneur who starts a new commercial bioscience company. And so I think, and, you know, I would encourage you to ask the scientific heads of these institutions themselves, but I think they really recognize that if those institutions are going to compete not only in the attraction of students, but in the advancement of science and in the attraction of philanthropic dollars, they have to be much more savvy to making sure that they've created an environment that is encouraging of new scientific advances, and with that, advances that can be translated relatively quickly from the lab to the patient bedside.
Now, much of the attention in recent years has revolved around the development of the East River Science Park and the Brooklyn Army Terminal as major biotech research initiatives. Lindsay, what will be the purpose of each of these facilities, and when are they expected to be open for business?
The East River Science Park certainly is a very exciting project for us. It's will be 1.1 million square feet of commercial lab space on 3.8 acres of city property. Very exciting, and it's located right in Manhattan in the heart of the First Avenue Science Corridor, adjacent to New York University and their School of Medicine, and not that far away from Memorial Sloan Kettering, Cornell's Medical College, and certainly Mount Sinai's as well. So it's a very exciting project that will allow
the companies to spin off and grow within the city. A lot of what you're going to like, and I'll let Bill speak to most of the tenanting elements of East River Science Park, but certainly some of the earlier and mid-stage growth opportunities will find their way there.
One of the unique things about a place that is specifically designed for early emerging and later stage companies, and this building, John, is one that literally can accommodate labs on every floor if we have the demand for that. It has above standard ceiling height so that all of the venting systems, the emergency power systems, the backup generation systems, all of that HVAC is built into this building. And unlike many buildings in New York, we understand, we being Alexandria in this case, which is a developer of life science properties across the U.S. and now increasingly across the globe, we understand that the life cycle of a bioscience company is not necessarily a lockstep function. And I can give you an example. I unfortunately can't give you the name, but we had a company that worked with us in Boston. They took, I think their initial amount of space was 1,500 square feet about 3 years ago. They had some very promising results. They grew to 5,000 square feet in one of our incubator facilities. They continued to grow. They were up to 20,000 square feet, and now they're occupying 50,000 square feet all within the space of 5 years. In a building that's not designed to accommodate that type of flexibility and without a landlord that understands that, you know what, I'm not going to hold you to your 1,500 square foot lease for a 10-year term. I'm literally going to take that lease and adapt it so that you can grow as your the needs of your science grow. That's what makes East River unique from a bioscience company perspective. I think the other piece that makes East River unique, and you may have seen the great map that Lindsay and his team put together on the nycbiotech.com website that shows all of the domestic and international biotech companies in New York. It kind of looks like a scatter plot of Manhattan where they're all located, and they sort of found these little niches and office spaces. And what I think East River will do will create an epicenter where these science and technology companies come together and can share space, and in the sharing of space can also share ideas. I think it's the same type of concept without stretching it a little bit too much as to why do you see great researchers congregate on an academic campus? Well, they each have their own labs, they each have their own offices, but there's quite a lot to be said for the informal water cooler effect, if you will, bumping into each other and saying, hey, have you guys been thinking about X? And those that hopefully spontaneous type of interaction that will happen within the East River Science Park campus, we believe, and we have seen in our other projects, will lead to additional and hopefully quicker advances in life science, sort of life science products and technologies.
And Bill, I think it's also intended that it be a central convening ground for the community as well, for the bioscience community as well. So we're hopeful that a variety of conferences and events in the tech and bioscience community will take place at East River Science Park.
Right. Thanks for pointing that out, Lindsay. That's exactly right. One entire floor of the East River Science Park is intended to be a conference floor that can accommodate meetings up to about 350 people. And by virtue of it being a neutral site, we're hoping to attract researchers from the different academic institutions, both within New York, the surrounding areas, and hopefully internationally, where they might have a reluctance to go and give a presentation at, you know, NYU because, well, am I really giving it to, you know, am I giving my trade secrets away? There's an opportunity there for them to meet at a neutral site, as well as you mentioned earlier in one of your questions about the cost of doing business in New York. The remainder of that conference floor is going to be divided up into smaller breakout or boardrooms so that a company can actually take less space within the East River Science Park for 360 days a year, and the 5 days a year when they need to meet with their venture capitalist or they need to meet with key investors or scientific advisory board members, they can literally rent out a boardroom on that second floor for a couple of hours or for an entire day.
Lindsay, I want to follow up with two questions here. When is the East River Science Park scheduled to open? And then can you tell us a little more about the Brooklyn Army Terminal as a center of biotech activity?
John, since we have a private developer that's moving forward on that, I will defer that question to Bill. I think we're looking sometime in 2010, perhaps.
Yeah, we're looking at the first quarter of 2010. Now, that's for tenant move-in, John. Obviously, there are tenants that we're talking to who have said, look, I want to build out my labs in a certain way. They're talking to architects, and sometimes those internal lab build-outs take several months. So we could actually start to see companies starting to work on building out their internal labs so that they're ready for occupancy at the beginning of 2010. We could probably see work on those internal labs happening as early as next summer.
But, John, the East River Science Park is a big accomplishment of Bloomberg administration. Like I said, it's on city-controlled property. City, state, and federal funding came together to support the development of the project, so we are really happy to see that move forward. As we are with BioBat is actually located at the Brooklyn Army Terminal, which is a 4 million square feet industrial property along the Brooklyn waterfront that is owned by New York City Economic Development Corporation. A portion of the Brooklyn Army Terminal, about 500,000 square feet, has been set aside for use for commercial bioscience. And so our targets for this particular project are later stage build out, pilot plant production, later stage development, later stage developed companies. And it's going to be, affordable wet lab manufacturing space for New York City's growing biotech community. And so a lot of opportunities. We're going to see where they grow from the incubator stage and then into BioBat. International AIDS Vaccine Initiative is actually going to be the anchor tenant for the BioBat facility.
When will that be ready for occupancy and for other companies as well to move in?
We also have a private developer involved with this project, Phase 3. I cannot get very specific on the dates. We're likely looking in the 2010 timeframe.
Final question is, what are some of the major success stories of life science companies that began as startups in the city or who moved to New York from somewhere else? Lindsay?
Again, we had mentioned Clinton Labs earlier. Real excited. They actually grew, found their start in Harlem, in West Harlem, and then have grown to 200 employees in Midtown West. And the website and the newsletter is filled with local bioscience company successes. Nanorex Therapeutics is based, it's an incubator company based at Audubon. They actually, we recently recruited them from New York City, and they had a round of funding of close to $7 million. IRX Therapeutics, their headquarters is based here in New York City. To date, they've raised close to $65 million in private financing. Their most recent round was about $25 million. They're in the cancer and viral disease product platform area. Intracellular Therapeutics is led by Sharon Mates, a serial entrepreneur, and they've had numerous successes with the rounds of funding as well. Antigenics, headquartered in New York City, had a variety of rounds of funding, plus they had a cancer vaccine approved in Russia this year. Innovive raised $15 million. Legal Merricks had numerous SBIR successes. And the list goes on. There's even in a tough funding environment that we have right now, the companies have been very successful.
And Lindsay is being great listing off those, but let's also think about the big boys as well.
Absolutely.
Pfizer's got 6,000 employees on. They've been in, I think, in New York since 1847. They've got 6,000 employees along 42nd Street and 3rd Avenue, looking at Forest Labs, which is based here, ImClone, which is obviously in the news, and Bristol-Myers Squibb, despite the fact that it has, you know, global facilities, still chooses to keep its headquarters here in New York City. And that's for, you know, all of those places, they're here for a definite reason, and it's not because of its cheap real estate.
Bill, previously you mentioned a website. I'm going to ask you to repeat that again for anybody who's interested in knowing more about the East River Science Park, that, anything else about New York biotechnology,
sure,
or about biotech news. Where do they go?
Well, they would go to www.nycbiotech.com, and they'll find information about all of the properties that we've talked about. They'll find this great bioscience bulletin that the city publishes on a monthly basis, talking about funding successes, key clinical successes, and they'll find a map of all of the companies that are in New York.
A calendar of events for all the bioscience-oriented activities that are taking place in the city. Many of them are international-type events, such as the upcoming Wind River Pharmaceutical Strategic Alliance Conference. That's happening in a couple of weeks, as well as local events like NYC Bio and Lab to Wall Street.
John, I wanted to just make one more point, because you asked Lindsay the question about affordable housing. And I think, although it may not be germane specifically to this topic, it's important to note one of the many things that the Bloomberg administration has done is, I think, over the course of the time, it has spent almost $7.5 billion to create affordable housing for over 500,000 New Yorkers. And just to put that in perspective, that's sort of more than the population of Atlanta. I think by June 2008, something over north of 80,000 units of affordable housing had been started, and the city is well on track of recognizing that affordable housing is important to keep the workforce here. But one of the things the city benefits from is also the great transit infrastructure it has. So, you know, if someone is looking to live in northern New Jersey or in Westchester or Long Island or southern Connecticut, given the rail lines and subway lines that connect, you can very easily, you know, in 20, 30, 40 minutes, live in a suburban environment and be working sort of in the heart of New York City quite easily.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.